February often places a cultural focus on love. But sometimes, love is not reflected in flowers or gifts of chocolate candy. Sometimes, loving someone is creating family connection during stress and helping your child feel seen, heard, and supported. Perhaps, loving someone is showing you care by staying emotionally connected when life feels uncertain. Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness or injury. WonderCast is supported by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. Join us today as we visit with Shalina Tareen, founder and president of Childhood Matters. Tune in as we talk through establishing a growth mindset with our children, building emotional wellness, and some extra tools available to support your family. Meet Shalina.
Hi, everyone. My name is Shalina. I'm the founder and president of Childhood Matters. I am also a mom of two wonderful children. My older one is a daughter, Abira. She is 29. She is also in the field of mental health. She's a therapist, and she is going to get married this year. So it's a big, big year for her. And my second child is 20. They are in college right now, and they are the reason that Childhood Matters began, and their name is Azan. And I'm married to the most wonderful man in the world. We've been married for over 30 years. Yes, over 30 years. And he is my biggest supporter, my biggest cheerleader, and just my best friend.
Well, I am so grateful to have you here, and congratulations on 30 years. I love that.
A little bit about my education and what brought me to Childhood Matters is really my work with children and families. I worked with mostly the littles, you know, in preschool. I've been a teacher, started my career as a teacher, and then worked my way up to direct a lot of our local preschool programs. And right after that, I opened an indoor play area. So I've done a lot of work with our community and families. And we'll talk a little bit more about Childhood Matters and the whys in a little bit, I guess.
Yes, I would love for you, if you are comfortable sharing a little bit about the why behind Childhood Matters and how that sort of came into fruition.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So as I was talking about my work in the field of education and mostly the early childhood education, I was very, very passionate, and I am still very passionate about, you know, the early childhood, of course, because it's so integrated with mental health and the early intervention piece. This kind of all started during COVID, and, you know, a lot of lives changed during COVID. And it was during that time that I got furloughed from my job. I was working for Bright Horizons at the time. And, you know, we tried to go virtual with our little ones, but you can't really, you know, have a program for our twos and threes and fours. And however much we wanted to, we had to kind of say this is not in the best interest of the children. And yes, I got furloughed. And at that time, I was like, okay, I need a passion project. So I wrote a children's book, and I've always wanted to do that. So that was the right time. The book is called The Learning Steps. It's about growth mindset for children. And around the same time, we were also navigating mental health challenges with my younger child. And we'd seen a little bit of this previously, but there was a lot of denial, you know, like, no, I'm seeing this, but I'm not seeing this. And as much as I would tell other parents, right, in my journey working with families, it's like, don't ignore it. You know, you're seeing those signs, you're seeing those red flags, let's try to get help. I was that parent who was completely in denial. But of course, you know, things escalated around that time. And thankfully, my daughter being in the field, she was actually just in school in her graduate program. And she's like, Mom, we need to talk about this, you know, and we need to find the help. And as we navigated as a family to find those resources and find the help, it just kind of blew my mind that if I, who has the support of my daughter, you know, to even like step into this, if I'm having so much trouble, there's so many families out there who are also going through this and so much more during COVID. So how are they finding their resources? So that's where Childhood Matters really began, is putting those resources together into boxes, which is now known as our Coping Toolbox program, we thought, hey, let's, you know, kind of put all these amazing tools and coping strategies and try to get these across to families, because at the time of COVID, you know, really couldn't get things out there. So yeah, that's pretty much how it began. And we're like, okay, this is not going to reach anywhere till we don't make it bigger. And as a family, we decided that we want to go nonprofit with this. We want this to be something that is going to be a legacy. So yeah, it began with that one program and it grew from there.
Did you find at the time when you were first kind of starting all of this programming that there was any community resistance, or do you feel like people were generally open to the resources?
At that time, just with that piece, I want to say that there was no resistance as per se, but I also found that not a lot of people had the awareness about mental health and what are coping strategies, what is this all about, right? So it was really that education piece that was missing. And that's where our education program kind of developed, because we're like, okay, we need to get the three key pieces together. That's, you know, our children, the parents, and the educators, right? It's almost like a triangle. And we need to come together and really put this education piece in. And of course, like as I started to do this work, I noticed that a lot of schools were doing this and we could just partner up and help each other.
So as you know, so many of our families and listeners that we support through Wonders and Worries do have a loved adult in their family that's facing a chronic illness such as cancer or heart disease or ALS or even injury like a brain injury or spinal cord injury. And they always, regardless of the illness or injury, their number one concern that we hear the most is their worry for their children. They worry specifically on whether or not this will burden their children or hinder their development. Because as you did say, those early years are so key in their development of their identity and who they are and how they access the world around them. And I feel like so many of our parents feel burdened by that worry. But the work that your nonprofit to help spread awareness about resources and tools, creating this zone of wellness, which I love that your programming has that. What kind of support do you feel like you would offer for families that are worried about their children's level of coping? Where would they start?
This was actually brought to us by one of our board members, and she is a cancer survivor. She likes to call herself a cancer thriver. And she had come to me. That's how she actually got involved with Childhood Matters. Is she's like, we need to put resources together for those families who are navigating illness, specifically cancer, since she was in that space. And we're like, okay, we need to sit down and think what is the most important, right, for these families? How are they navigating this together as a family? And we put a lot of thought into that. Now, of course, the worry piece is big, right? It's like children are so anxious about what's going to happen. How is a family going to even survive through this ordeal? I guess the first thing, obviously, for families is to be very honest, right, about the illness and really give the information to their children, of course, in an age-appropriate way. We want to make sure that they are kept in the loop of things. Brooke had brought this really amazing thing to our toolbox. We actually have a cancer toolbox. I'm not sure if you're aware. But in that cancer toolbox, the first thing that she felt was really important to have is a family mission statement. What is our family's mission right now, right? And what is our word of the day even? Just focusing on those little things and putting together those little moments of coping together as a family. So if anybody, I want to put this out there, is struggling with something like that and does not know how to put those coping strategies together, they can nominate families through our website to get those cancer boxes. And we ship them nationwide and we ship them for free. And if you want to purchase it, of course, you can purchase it too. But yes, absolutely. We're here for those families to be able to help them navigate through that.
I love that resource. That's one of the things I was most impressed about when I was looking through your website is you really have a great catalog of free resources for families. Do you want to kind of talk to them a little bit about what those free resources look like on your website?
Yeah. So we love to make everything really tangible. And with children, you know, they do so well when they have that cause and effect, or if they can really feel or see things. So we want to make sure that when families are working together with coping strategies, they have some available for them. So we have a lot of them on our free resources tab on the website, and I really want to add more. But I also want to put it out there that if you do subscribe to our newsletter, we put into downloadable resources every month as well. So that's kind of, you know, ongoing. You receive that. The toolboxes, again, are another resource that you can nominate a family. We have about 17 different toolboxes. We also customize it. So if there's a family who feels that they're going through something, or maybe, you know, the resources that we have on our site may be really for the younger ones and their child is older, or a teen or a youth, we can customize that as well.
That's awesome. In your work that you do with families, what do you feel like the role of community, like what does an emotionally supportive community look like to you?
Super important, right? It's a village. I guess for us, an emotionally supportive community would really be where our children, our youth are really seen, they're valued, and they're heard without judgment, right? And I want to really kind of talk about my child. My child dresses in a very expressive way because they are, you know, interested in fashion and, you know, they're really out there with the way that they dress, and they're having a hard time getting a job. I don't want to tell them to change the way that they dress, because what message am I putting out there for my child? That change yourself to be able to fit in the mold. Not every child is going to fit in that mold, whether it's in our schools, right? In the way that they learn, in the way that they speak, in the way they present themselves. So definitely that judgment piece, right? We also want to make sure that our children, whether they are in our care as our own children, whether they are in our care as educators, in the hospitals, wherever you are, right? Their emotions are acknowledged and not minimized. We also, for an emotionally supportive community, adults have to be emotionally aware and trauma-informed almost, right? So that's where I think we do a lot of our work, is really going into our community spaces to be able to provide that trauma-informed education. And then want to make sure that, you know, our responses to not just children, but to each other, especially in the world that we are in right now, that our responses are rooted in empathy, you know, and understanding. So we want to make sure that we are creating a safe space for our children, because they're not feeling safe right now.
If you have a family that maybe is listening that has a new diagnosis and they're very worried about the well-being and communication of their family, is there any one specific tool that you find has been maybe most helpful in those early stages when they're trying to really build that communication, kind of connect that triangle of communication between the schools and their family and their child? Is there any one tool that you'd highlight that feels like best place to start?
I don't know about a tool, honestly, Julie, but I want to say definitely communication and advocacy, right? Especially with the schools. And I went through this with my child at school, them having so many mental health challenges, and forming your strong connections with teachers, right? But then also building those steps to be able to communicate and advocate for your child till the very end. Connection is the key.
For maybe somebody who's trying to build connection with their child through a time of crisis, just like now, like through illness, and maybe they're feeling like they're failing, how do you feel like they can grow connection even with their own child?
Well, first of all, if you're worried about connection right away, it means you care, right? And that's what matters. So if you are listening right now and if you're worried about that, know that you obviously are in the right space and you want to make a difference. So connection doesn't always look like having those deep conversations. And, you know, really, it's about the consistency. Could even look like just driving in the car together in silence. That could be connection right there. So lower the pressure on yourself and lower the pressure on your children, and just focus on the small shared moments, right? Whether it's going for a walk together, creating something, you know, if your child is really interested in art or music, try to research some of the music maybe that they're interested in and strike up a conversation about that. So really finding those moments where they're like, oh, mom or dad, you know, what do you know about this? Let's talk about it, right? The open connection comes naturally almost. So follow your child's interest, even if they're different from your own. And trust me, I can speak to that because my children completely on a different page. TikTok has really helped me. And I'm not advocating for social media, but I'm just telling you.
100%. TikTok has helped me as well, too. Just there are some good parts of social media, for sure.
Absolutely. And also, like, you know, don't think that if you haven't formed that connection now, that you'll never be able to form the connection, because you can repair, right? Repair matters more than getting that connection perfected. You just need to build that trust. And sometimes trust has to be built over and over again.
I love how you tell parents to lower that pressure on yourself. The fact that you're wanting to build connection, maybe the fact that you're worried about burdening your child with your illness, that shows how much you care right there. And so that's the perfect space to grow from. In your book about growth mindset, do you want to explain a little bit about what growth mindset means for maybe our parents that don't know what that means, and how they can, even in their younger children, start developing that growth mindset?
Absolutely. I got really interested in the growth mindset philosophy for, again, my child. You know, all that research, how can I help them? What's missing? You know, what's that missing piece? So growth mindset is really about teaching children that it's not about being perfect. It's about the progress you make, and that's what matters, right? The growth mindset philosophy is actually from Carol Dweck. She's an American psychologist, and she says that you're not really born with IQ, or you're not born with a skill set. This is something that comes to you with effort, with practice, and with making a lot of mistakes. And what we need to let our children know is that it's okay to make those mistakes. Tell them, celebrate it. Every time you're making a mistake, you're building a new neural pathway in your brain, right? So really, you're getting smarter every time you're making a mistake. So that, and also celebrating your own mistakes. Don't beat yourself up when you make those mistakes. Give your child a high five. Like, oh my God, I just made a mistake. Oh, I built a new neural pathway. So really practicing those things where, you know, you are telling your children, take it one step at a time. If you don't know math today, or if you don't know how to swim today, doesn't mean it's never going to happen. You're not on a, you don't have a time frame here. I always tell children, or even teens, the three-letter word, right? Yet, how powerful it is. Because look at the difference here, and I'm going to be very vulnerable here. I don't know how to ride a bike, and I don't know how to swim. Okay, those are two things my parents didn't teach me. And now watch me completely change or reframe this sentence. I cannot swim yet. I cannot ride a bike yet, which lowers the pressure on myself.
Yes, that is huge.
And also tells myself and others that I will be able to do it at some point. I just cannot do it yet.
That is really important, especially for our families too, that are maybe going through treatment or have a chronic condition or illness that's keeping them from being able to be the version of themselves that they want to be, to just giving them permission to open that vulnerabilities of, I can't throw you a birthday party with all your friends yet, or I can't travel with your soccer team to your tournament yet. Just giving them that emphasis of, it's not that there's not that want and that desire. And then going on to explain why that would be, because I'm taking this medication that makes me sleepy, or because I have a low immune system right now. So it's important that you touched on, right, that growth mindset is ever evolving. It's through our whole lives, even as adults.
Absolutely. And then also for those families, like you mentioned, right, instead of saying what we can't do, just focusing on what can we do, right? So, hey, we can have a family game night to celebrate your birthday, or giving some ideas where these are the things we can do right now, and really narrowing down on those family connections and making it really fun. Like, oh, we can get ice cream and celebrate tonight. Yeah, I feel I also wanted to talk a little bit about parents who are navigating with those illnesses, right? Is really taking a pause and taking a deep breath and putting your own oxygen mask on, taking care of yourself first, right? Because I know you're so focused on how are you not able to parent the way you want to parent your child, or being able to give them what you want to give at this time. But really taking care of yourself is indirectly taking care of your children. So just focusing on that.
In terms of building emotional intelligence in children, what are some tools that you have found just in with your practice, or even through tools on your website, that parents can utilize to help build emotional intelligence?
I always tell parents, model, 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 right? Children are always watching us, whether they are young or they're old. we can support emotional intelligence by modeling it. So basically naming your own feelings when they're showing up, and then also following that up with what healthy coping strategies you're using. Like, so for instance, I get overwhelmed very easily. So I made it a point to, you know, talk about that. Like, okay, hold on for a second. I'm getting really overwhelmed right now, or I'm feeling really anxious right now. I am going to go take a quick walk and come back. Okay. Or even I tell my child this all the time, and now they start to offer it to me when I'm feeling overwhelmed or anxious, getting an ice pack and giving it to me so I can put it on my neck, which helps me with my anxious thoughts at that time, right? So yes, so definitely modeling your own emotions and the way that you're handling them. I also feel that encouraging coping tools like breathing, the mindfulness piece is huge, and it's not a one-time thing, it's a practice. So you have to keep practicing that. Really encouraging the movement piece in your home, whether it's going outside, if you can go outside, putting that movement piece inside the home. So doing jumping jacks or, you know, running in place or whatever that looks like for you. If you're able to practice journaling, and that's such a great coping strategy for families, even doing a shared journal, even, you know, whether you can do a question and answer where your child is writing a question or worry and you're able to respond it where it's not really verbalizing it right there, because sometimes children don't like that pressure of speaking, but they want that question answered. So having that journal in place, a family journal or a, you know, child-parent journal, whatever that looks like, building a creative piece, a creative expression is big. It really helps build emotional skills. So keep that creativity going with our clay, Play-Doh, whatever. And also play, right? Just simply play with them. That's a big coping strategy right there. Basically, you know, the consistency, the emotional safety and the connection matters more than doing everything perfectly, right? And then, of course, validating your children's emotions, right? Before trying to fix them. We're always in the fixing mode as parents, right? How can I make you feel less sad, or how can I make you feel less worried? Sometimes they don't want you to fix it. Sometimes they just want you to sit with them with their emotion, or even they want to sit alone with their emotion, and that's okay.
I think that that is such great advice. And we will link to the different tools that you have also mentioned throughout this. We'll link to your website so people can go access those and see what those are about. Do you want to take a minute and share a little bit about the ways that Childhood Matters is supporting the community around you? Because I think you have some fun things coming up. I saw in April you have your, do y'all call it your ZOW, your Zone of Wellness?
Yeah, the Zones of Wellness, our fifth annual. So I'll start with that. Zones of Wellness is a community event. It's a free event, and we'd like to call it a community play date because it is a fun place. We are trying to promote, you know, mental health awareness, of course, and we want it a place to be where families are not feeling alone, and we are really trying to normalize asking for help. So we get together with 40 to 50 different partners in the community, and we completely transform a park into different zones. So there's a mindfulness zone, a nature zone, an art zone, a play and sensory zone, a music zone. And then in every zone, we have activities and experiences for families. So for instance, the music zone would hold a silent disco and a drum circle and a sound bath. And that way, families get to experience these and know, hey, this is available for us for our own wellness, right? And they take home a lot of different coping strategies with them, along with a lot of resources from our community for mental health, for wellness, for education, lots of different pieces, right? It's a three-hour event. It's completely free, and it's coming a little bit earlier this year. It's going to be in April. We usually have it in May, but wanted to kind of have it just before Mental Health Awareness Month sets in. So April 25th in Thousand Oaks. I also wanted to highlight a parent support group that's starting for caregivers and parents who have children who might be navigating an autoimmune diagnosis. That's a place that you can feel supported. That's an online virtual support group. Other ways that we support our families is by providing completely free therapy for children as young as 5 and up to teens and youth 25 years of age. We provide virtual and in-person therapy. The therapy service would be limited to our California population. Please take advantage of this. And then we have our toolbox program that we talked about. We also have a ambassador program. We take in youth from all over the country to be part of our ambassador program, which is a space where we give our teens and youth a place for advocacy, a place to learn about mental health, and a place to do community outreach work. So that's another place where our teens can get involved.
This information has been so helpful. Is there anything that you feel like I have failed to mention or anything else you want to share with our listening population?
Just to have, you know, to have grace for yourself and for others. Navigating, battling an illness, whether it's your own or your child, battling with mental health challenges is difficult, right? Parenting a child, especially with anything at all, puts you in a very vulnerable space and you need help. So don't feel alone. Form a village around you. Find your people, because there are people who want to help you.
Thank you for tuning into our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.